Welcome back, guys, to the Kinda Nice podcast. Today we have another LA episode brought to you guys straight from LA. Ninja Warriors recording here in Los Angeles at Universal Studios. Me and Daniel are here. Daniel's here competing. I'm here just recording podcasts and supporting. And all these episodes you've heard recently are, you know, brought to you straight from LA. Shout out to the Patreons. Patreon members kind of allow us to be out here and record these things. If you're not a part of the Patreon and you don't know what the benefits are, you get access to full video podcast episodes. In Houston, we have a full studio setup and you get like a more produced show. Here, it's only a one camera setup, but you still get to see our beautiful faces and still get to be a little more interactive. So if you want to catch the full video episodes of this episode and I would say like 30 or 40 plus other episodes now, you could go to patreon.com/kindanice, sign up for as little as $5 a month. Really help support us. Other than the Patreon, this is probably episode like almost 70.
We're close to 70.
This might be lucky number 70. We have a very special guest today. We've been trying to get him on for a while, and just the LA thing has been nice because we're just around all these people we want to have on, so it's like super easy to just get him up to the hotel room and record with him. It's Lance Pekus, the young cowboy ninja himself. Now Lance has a multitude of accolades. He's a farmer, he's a father, a husband. He's been competing on Ninja. This is his 12th season, so he's been doing it for over a decade now. He's also the author of the Ninja Games, The Warrior Within. If you're not aware of what that is, it's a I always get fiction and nonfiction.
It's fiction.
It's fiction. Okay. It's not real.
It is a fiction book
based on the life of Lance Pekus.
Yeah. So it's a super cool nonfiction book or fiction book. I'm blowing it. that he wrote with a buddy, Jesse Haynes. And if you want to get this book, we'll talk a little bit about it in the podcast. But if you want to get this book, they can get it on Amazon. I'm assuming is the best spot to get it.
Yep.
Yeah. Cool. So check the book out on Amazon. Farmer as well said that. Did I miss?
Well, not just farmer, but rancher.
Rancher.
There is a difference.
Yeah.
Oh, because you do cattle and mostly that kind of stuff, huh?
Yeah. So ranchers tend to work with livestock mainly. Cattle is, cattle rancher. I guess you could, pig farmer, and stuff like that. So farmers tend to, grow crops and stuff like that. But a lot of the times ranchers are farmers too, because we're.
Yeah.
Okay.
Your job's a little cooler. Yeah.
I do put up some hay and alfalfa, some oat hay and stuff like that, but I would not consider myself a farmer.
It's gotcha.
definitely the least amount of things I like to do. So
okay. And then just to give a little background, Lance, I remember watching you compete for several years before I ever even got on American Ninja Warrior, and you've been iconic. You've lasted the ages. You've come back year after year and have easily become and been for a long time one of the most recognizable faces. I mean, and not only just because of what you do and the cowboy hat, everyone's like, oh, the guy with the cowboy hat, but just like the successes that you've had, the strengths that you've put forth, not just as an athlete, but someone from your background. And it's so cool. I guess just kind of jumping right into it, like a little bit about yourself. Like you live in Idaho, is that right?
Yeah, correct.
Okay, Idaho. So tell us a little bit about, yourself. You live out there with your family on X amount of acres doing the ranch life. What does that kind of look like? How would you describe that?
Yeah, so I live in the Central Mountains of Idaho, which, Idaho is a pretty, kind of diverse state, especially from the north to the south. Mm. So kind of live in the Rocky Mountains there. It's hot, higher elevation, Salmon, Idaho sits at about, 4,200 feet. So kind of consider us kind of high desert. We're colder. So that's why we don't like farm a lot of grounds, down in they call it the banana belt down lower where they, Idaho grows most of the potatoes and stuff like that. That's farming country. Up where at's more kind of like range desert kind of. So we do put up some hay and alfalfa, but it's mainly cattle country is where we're.
Wow. How many acres do you live on?
So the home ranch is, sitting around 300 acres. We lease, a few other places. Mm-hmm. The family, Heather's family, I married into the ranch.
Oh, okay.
there's been a lot of family stuff going on lately, especially the last 2 or 3 years, you know, just with the way.
Yeah, the world has been.
the way the world thinks. But if you want to, you know, get into, you know, family and a lot of different things, talk about farming and ranching families, especially when successional planning starts coming up. A lot of things like definitely hit the fan, especially between family. But a lot of those things work themselves out. But yeah. me and my wife have been branching off on our own, which has been a great thing for us. We're leasing a smaller 60-acre place, kind of doing smaller herd stuff, but we're actually doing working on more direct finish, marketing of our cattle. The Heather's family place was mainly a cow-calf operation.
Okay. Dude, I just saw that video you posted about the cow giving birth.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my word. Is that like a regular thing? Like having to aid in a birth of a cow?
You know, every so often, depending on how many you're calving out. Wow. Yeah. There'll always be something going on. So in that video, we were watching a cow, you know, that was only like the seventh one we'd had starting our calving season. All the others had them just fine.
Okay.
But I could tell something was off because I could see a foot and the head starting to come out, but it was missing one of its other feet.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you guys aren't fathers, so you don't really know. But it's funny when are you going to be a dad soon too?
I mean, I don't know. Like I think this is the year Abby was like, yeah, maybe. It's
good.
And I was
do it. I'm a father of two kids. I'd highly recommend it. But the funny part is I've calved out so many cows over the years that when me and my wife are having our kids,
you guys just pros by that point?
It's same thing. Just pop it out. I'm ready to go.
I would say Heather was definitely getting annoyed because I was comparing it to a cow a lot of the times. I'd be like, well, if the cow hadn't had it by now, I know what to do. I'd grab some chains and pull it by now. she didn't like that idea. But, you get used to a lot of things. And with a calf, you have to have both legs come out and then the head come out and for it to like come out. And
okay.
In that video, one of the front legs was back. So its shoulder was getting caught in the pelvis. And, you could tell it's having issues.
So you have to like reach in there and like get the leg. And
Have you seen that video, kid?
Nah, it's dog. Wild, and I probably won't look at it.
I literally have to like
push glove on. I'm assuming, right? Like
actually, I didn't.
Oh no, it was gloveless.
Oh my god, no!
It's all natural.
I didn't. I washed my hands with soap and stuff. That was for the cow's protection.
I was about to say afterwards, right?
And afterwards too. I took a deep shower.
Damn.
Wow.
But yeah, I literally had to push the cow, the calf's head and foot all the way back in, and then readjust and straighten the leg it out? And get that other leg.
Wow.
And that's gnarly.
Yep.
Right. That's just another day though, huh?
it gets messy. Yeah. It's definitely done it plenty of times, but it's always exciting when you got another animal's life in your hands.
Yeah.
You're trying to, you know, help them out.
Just guesstimation. How many, you know, calves do you have on a regular basis out there on the ranch?
So
like on a regular basis, like how many new calves are born each year? Is it like a major operation?
So with my in-laws operation, we were running about 300 mother cows. So we were calving about 300 calves a year.
Wow.
So with a cow calf, that's like the whole operation is you breed the cows, you calve them out, you let them, the cows raise the calves for about 10 months. And then you wean the calves and you sell the calves to someone else.
Is that, so you said you married into it. So like, what was your childhood like growing up? Like, did you think you were going to end up being a rancher? Did you grow up on like a rancher / farm style, or were you like a city boy? Or like,
what was life like?
No, like if you ask my in-laws for sure, they would say I was a city boy. I definitely grew up in the Northwest. My parents are totally like California city people.
Really?
Oh, really? Okay,
yeah. But they kind of fled California in the 80s. So I never experienced California. I lived in Utah, Montana, Oregon, and then I graduated high school in Washington State.
Wow.
Always lived in rural areas, had a lot of friends that were involved with that stuff, but you know, I never had direct contact with it, but I really loved Montana when I was there.
Yeah.
And I got a wrestling scholarship right out of high school.
Oh, okay. So that was like your sports background was like wrestling?
Wrestling was probably my best sports background. I played football, baseball, and I ran track 1 year.
Yeah. Really?
So I was kind of like a multi-sport, three-sport athlete.
Yeah.
Growing up. My dad was really into baseball.
Okay.
I honestly wasn't that great of a baseball player.
Yeah, neither was I. Took it for 1 year and was like, I don't like this that much.
Yeah. When I got a wrestling scholarship to Montana, I just jumped on that, ran off to Montana, and that's actually, I met my wife my freshman year of college.
Really?
Went and visited her during the summer and just kind of fell in love with that atmosphere. You know, yeah. I was 18 years old. I was, farming, changing irrigation, helping with the cows on the range, learning, the weld and all sorts of stuff. And I just kind of really fell in love with that and just kind of kept with it.
Wow.
I ended up actually getting a job with the United States Forest Service that next year. Cause I just went out to visit when I was 18.
Okay.
Kind of just spent about a month out there. Just kind of really enjoyed
it. Idaho?
In Idaho.
Okay. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. It's Idaho is kind of right on, Salmon's right on the Montana, Idaho border.
Okay.
Kind of just 2 hours south of Missoula, Montana.
Wow.
So that next year at 19, I got a job with the United States Forest Service, packing in supplies with stock into the wilderness backcountry. So I'd pack in 6 to 7 head of mules and horses into people doing trail work in the middle of nowhere that they'd be gone out there for 2 to 3 months at a time. And I'd be like their contact to the outside world. Like I'd bring them, I'd literally bring them food. I'd bring them mail, line them out on their next job and stuff like that.
How long did you do that for?
So I did that pretty much all through college.
Okay. Sorry, finish that thought. And then I got another question on top of that.
So I would spend my summers through college packing to the Forest Service. And I tended to work like a seven to eight day on, 7 to 8 day off schedule.
Okay.
That.
Oh, that's nice.
So then I'd help Heather and her family out on the ranch on my days off. So that was literally my summers throughout all college.
Wow.
And then after we both graduated, we were like, we really enjoy that lifestyle. Moved back and just kind of started doing it permanently.
Yeah. So you spent a lot of time outdoors, not only growing up, but mostly during that.
Oh yeah.
Collegiate years.
Pretty much from 18 to 26, I spent all my summers sleeping under the stars and
they get beautiful stars out there.
Oh yeah.
Gosh. Kid and I, Houston, you look up and even on a clearest Houston night sky, nothing, nothing. Abby's been asking me for a couple years now. She wants to go visit some of these star parks.
Oh yeah.
I think Utah has a really popular location that's known for some of the clearest, mm-hmm. most spectacular night skies.
Yeah, what do they call them? Dark sky locations and stuff that.
Yes.
Or preserves and stuff
mm-hmm,
like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Salmon, where we live, is actually borders the Frank Church River of Novaturn Wilderness, which is the largest designated wilderness, continuous wilderness in the lower 48. So we're actually one of those largest dark night reserves.
Oh, nice.
Wow. Is that where Bigfoot's at?
I'm sure. He would hide. It'd be a good spot.
That would
for
be
him.
The spot.
Yeah.
Nice.
Wow. Yeah, I've spent a lot of time out there. I haven't seen him. So I wouldn't say he's there, but it's possible.
How many acres is it? Do you know off the top of your head? Other than just the largest?
The Frank Church connects with some
is
of
it
the
like thousands?
Some of the no, it's millions. Yeah.
It's a big area.
Big
area. Yeah. It's I think it's 1.4 million acres or
wow.
something like that.
Oh my gosh.
No, it's something super I've kind of had a taste of stuff like that, just outdoor living, just making, it's such a fulfilling thing that we had a buddy just move out to, I think, Oklahoma and do the same thing. He went from just kind of living a normal life to buying land in Oklahoma. And he's doing more
he's got
of like
a homestead.
Homestead life. Oh, yeah. But it seems so sick because you don't wake up and wonder what you're going to do with the day. It's I need to do stuff so I can eat and, be able to just live. And he talks about it just being super fulfilling. So imagine there's something similar with just working outdoors and working with your hands and providing for these animals and doing all that stuff. So was that something that when you kind of, married your wife, it was hey, if I marry this, this woman, that's the lifestyle I have to go with. The parents were hey, whoever you marry has to come back and kind of work this, ranch.
The funny part is, my wife has two sisters and both of those other, one for sure you could never tell was raised on a ranch.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
She lives in Boise, Idaho, total city girl. The other one was was kind of a rough, you know, cowboy type girl. She rodeoed in college and everything like that. But like, almost at this point, you could tell, like, she became a nurse in like Twin Falls. Like, as far as she's almost become, you know, pretty city as well. So me and my wife were the only ones that kind of moved back and actually kind of continued and started being part of that lifestyle and stuff like that. So it definitely wasn't an obligation. It wasn't like, oh, you're marrying in this, you have to do it. It was kind of like,
it's kind of happened organically. Yeah, we chose
it. We really enjoyed it. My wife really loves that type of lifestyle.
Yeah. It's unique nowadays in the world we live in.
And we knew we wanted to raise our kids in that type of atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know, kind of away from the hustle and bustle and just, you know, being involved. Like, there's something about, you know, raising them with, you know, chores and and stuff like that. It's more
traditional for sure.
It is. And it's not like just your typical, like, take the garbage out chores to get your money. They start understanding things more, and it like that you can get it with like a typical like cat and dog pet too, but like when you start getting into like cattle, sheep and all, you know, other type of livestock, and you really like instill it in like your kids, like, hey, these animals depend on you for living. If you don't feel good and you don't want to feed these animals, they're probably gonna die.
Yeah.
If you don't go out and check and make sure that everything's okay, like, these animals are in your life. Like, this isn't just a chore. It's like a responsibility.
You know? Wow. And,
So
wow. That's and awesome. Your kids are how old now?
So Grayson just turned 8, beginning this month. Gracie's 9, and she'll turn 10 in June.
Okay. Yeah. So they're very close together.
Yeah.
Yep. Wow. That's really cool. Cause okay. So growing up in that environment, did you choose, you know, to want that or keep that based on your own life? You're like, okay, I wasn't a huge fan of my own city upbringing. I really like how my kids can have it. Or was it just like, hey, let's try something new with these potential benefits?
Yeah. You know, not growing up in that lifestyle, but growing up kind of around it.
Okay.
I felt like my family, what they were trying to escape that hustle and bustle city life. So they kept moving out to these, you know, more rural areas, but like they were moving to these areas that kept exploding in population. So I kept seeing these areas that were losing that farm ground, losing that rural ground. And like every place we moved, it was like, oh, more rural. Oh, you know, 5 years later, suddenly like,
it seems like nowadays, like that's becoming the dream, more popular. I'm seeing a lot of people, especially in Houston, go from wanting to be in the suburbs to like literally moving out to like Magnolia, which is more like
Conroe, the outskirts,
pretty much just trying to get land and some animals and like just raise their family out there. Whereas it seems in the past it was more, you know, it was the opposite. Everybody was trying to get to the city and closer to just like the town and stuff. But people are going back to like, nah, let me, you know, raise a family outside.
You know, and I've seen it a lot, especially with I think COVID kind of like really,
I think so too. I think
things
that was
really
a catalyst,
you know, faster. You see a lot more people in our area. A lot more people are able to, they're working remotely now. People that would never been able to move to Salmon are starting to move there because they can work, you know, work from home.
Yeah. They give them the freedom to do that.
Buy some land and you know, they're bringing outside income in and stuff like that. So, you know, it's interesting how COVID has kind of changed that a little bit, but I almost think it's like the reverse, like move out west, you know, like, in the past when everyone was moving from like the Midwest, moving out west to California and, you know, these cities were just booming in population. It's almost like everyone's kind of fleeing these bigger cities and moving back out to these rural flyover states and trying to, you know, pick up this land and establish themselves.
Yeah. I know that's a kind of dream of Abby and mine. Like I talk all the time. My parents have property on the outskirts of Houston. And so Abby and I are like, yes, we want to build on the property and raise our kids out there. And I mean, more and more friends of mine that are, you know, starting to start their families and things like that. Like, that's the goal. They're like, yeah, we don't want just the extreme hustle, bustle, busyness of life. Like, we want to take things like nice and slow and have that ease of just the calm and quiet spot. So really cool though. But I had a question a minute ago. You were talking about your college years. What did you major in? Like, what was the college life like for you?
So when I first started, I didn't know what I wanted.
Okay. Just kind of getting your basics out of the way.
I was getting my, you know, prereqs, and then I started business originally. But then after I started working for the Forest Service, I ended up switching my degree to originally was environmental science.
Okay.
But it was very policy based and they didn't really have a lot of the science behind it. I felt like, So I ended up switching to natural resource sciences, which is more of the science. I thought was more of a science based, had more forestry, geology, soils.
When you say you worked for the Forest Service, what is that?
So the United States Forest Service is a branch within the United States Department of Agriculture.
Okay.
So most of the land in the West, and now you guys being from Texas, there's not a lot of public ground. It's almost all private, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Start going up more north and west, it's almost all of it's public ground. So when people were coming over and homesteading, everyone kind of homesteaded the fertile ground because you had to be able to, show production on a certain amount of acreage and stuff like that. So everyone was picking up the good farm ground and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what didn't get homesteaded and was left over, the forest ground that was productive and the government thought that they could use for timber harvest and stuff like that, made their own branch of the government to manage that. So that became the Forest Service.
They had no idea that existed.
Yeah. So on top of that, what it wasn't forested, and basically a whole big chunk of that couldn't get homesteaded, and a lot of that ends up being sagebrush desert ground, is BLM, or Bureau of Land Management ground.
Okay.
So those tend to be your two major public lands in the West, is Bureau of Land Management and Forest Service. And then you'll have private and then state ground in there.
So what is your job working for them on a day-to-day look like back then?
So back then it was mainly trail work. So it was maintaining the trail system mainly within the Frank Church River.
Almost like a ranger, no? Like
kind of like a park ranger?
Yeah, they called a lot of them wilderness rangers. That wasn't my official job table. I was more of a packer.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I just pack supplies, but then do trail work and stuff like that. But after graduating, I ended up packing in some guys that were working for the Rocky Mountain Research Station, which was the research branch of the Forest Service.
Mm-hmm.
And actually got hooked up with them because they needed, because our area is so rough and rugged and just hard to get to. And they were doing research on tree soil and fire data in all this rough country. And it the science data was kind of randomly located. So it would literally be throwing a dart at the forest and be like, all right, go to that spot, measure those trees there. They hated it because the area was so rough. And I was I'm pretty good in this area. I can get out there. So, I ended up getting hooked up with them. So I worked for the Rocky Mountain Research Station, just running around collecting data for 10 years for them.
Wow.
And it was a good job because it was a permanent seasonal.
Okay.
So I only had to work 6 months out of the year, basically during the summer.
Oh, wow.
But got health insurance and retirement through the
That's awesome.
Do you still do stuff with them or no?
So I was having a hard time. A lot of you guys know my wife has MS and stuff like that. So it was requiring me to be out for 6, 7, 8 days at a time to get some really backcountry stuff. I was doing everything from riding motorcycles to riding horses to doing 4 or 5 day river pack trips.
Oh, you're going out there.
Yeah. I do fly-ins. I'd fly into a backcountry airstrip and be gone for 2 or 3 or 4 days. That was getting hard to do with my wife in the condition that she was in.
Yeah.
So I was looking a couple of years ago just to maybe, get out of that. Mm-hmm. It was going to be hard, turning down especially the health insurance more than anything else. So I was going to look into maybe just start ranching and ranching more full time instead of just, helping out the family and doing it part time. And when I was pulling out, the Salmon Chalice actually came to me and said they needed help with their minerals and geology program.
Oh, wow.
So the last 2 years, and it actually led into, a permanent full time year round job, which I didn't really want a full time year round job, but I ended up taking it just because it was a pretty good position.
Yeah.
So it was a biological science position within the minerals and geology program. So currently right now I'm inspecting the largest cobalt mine getting put in the Salmon Chalice right now, underground mine.
Wow.
they should be operational here in the next couple months, and then inspecting drilling programs and drilling operations for exploratory drillers going
out. That's a whole other world to me. Like that's that's wild, and that's what you're doing.
That's what I'm currently doing right
now. Wow. Okay, and then the stuff that you were learning in college, a lot of that you're able to then apply to the various outdoor.
Yeah, I had to really like. I've been working with geologists and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. The natural resource background helps a bunch because I don't have to know specifically a lot of the geology or the minerals that they're going after. I'm learning a lot more about it.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But I'm working with specialists, and I'm actually, my main job is to make sure that they're following the environmental regulations.
Okay.
To make sure that they're not, you know, when they're doing the drilling projects or when they're extracting the minerals, that they're not, you know, contaminating groundwater and contaminating surface water. So actually my degree in natural resource sciences helps me, with the environmental.
Yeah. And that's really cool how even, you know, graduating high school and, you know, pursuing that career and then even changing a few times when you were at college, as far as like the primary focus, you're even what you're doing now still kind of falls under the same umbrella of what you've already learned and kind of what you already desired to do a little bit or desired to operate within. And I think that's really, really cool. But then where and how, maybe even why does Ninja fit into all of that?
Hold on, before you get into Ninja,
okay, go for it.
I want to hear about, like, you talked about like this backpacking and like landing.
Okay, yeah, pick your brain more there.
That's crazy. You got to have some crazy stories of like, that's some Bear Grylls type stuff. Like you're out there. Like I'm assuming you're like
living
a
off full the land?
On survivalist. Like we could drop you off in the middle of nowhere and you'd be fine, right?
Yeah, you know, for the most part, yeah, like. I definitely be able to find my way out or find my way to where I need to go and stuff.
That's
like that.
Crazy.
Like I've done like several like 30-mile loop backpack trips, you know,
just hiking and horseback.
Yeah.
Riding.
I've been dropped off with, you know, on a backcountry airstrip, did a 30-mile backpacker. With
and this
it,
is
with
just you
guy.
By yourself?
No, I normally had one other guy. With
okay.
Me.
Okay.
Yeah, so we normally did it in teams.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That makes sense though. Cause if anything happens, you're like, I have to be with you.
Buddy system.
You have some, do you have any crazy stories, just wildlife or like close calls of being?
So
like-
the craziest story is I was two and a half days back on going to be a 7-day backpacker, and we were going up this creek called Clear Creek, which was used to be like this main gateway opening into the Bighorn Crags, which is like kind of like they call it mini Yosemite where we're at, because it's kind of like they got granite slabs that are kind of similar to like Yosemite at a very smaller scale, but you know, it's still really cool in its own way. Used to be the main way in there, but in 2000 there was this big Clear Creek fire, and it just totally destroyed that whole drainage. The trees are down; it's been washed out. So, like, literally since like 2000, it's like for 10, 12 years, like no one ever goes up there because it's just you're climbing over trees, you know, the trail's gone out, but we had three sites back there. So we were like, we could do this seven day loop or whatever.
Was this for work or for fun?
This was for work.
Okay.
Yeah. Trying to get to those field sites to, you know, collect that data. And 2.5 days in, first thing in the morning, look up, and there's we started seeing a lot of like elk sign. And then we see this 5-point elk kind of come up. He's, you know, 50 yards up the ridge, and he kind of looks like he's concerned. And he looks behind him, and there's two wolves coming behind him. And then a third one comes, and literally one of the wolves would kind of get up in front of it to get him to start putting his head down and fighting. And while the elk was fighting the one, the other two would come behind and it's called hamstringing, when like a dog tries to bite the hamstrings of a, you know, a cow or, you know, so it's trying to hamstring, trying to take it down.
Yeah.
So it was totally like natural geographic, you know, stuff going on. My buddy actually had a camera at the time. I don't know. It was like 2012 or something, I think, when this happened. So it was kind of an older camera, at the time. And, he pulls it out, and as soon as he pulls it out, like the three wolves kind of go off to the side and just kind of sit down and kind of start looking our direction. We're like,
oh no.
Like, do they see us?
They're filming this. We can't do anything.
Yeah. It's like, oh no,
they broke out the cameras.
What's going on? And the next thing I know it, I turn behind, and there's seven wolves within like 15, 20 yards running our direction. And I just start yelling. I start screaming. I had like hiking poles with me.
People don't realize how big wolves are.
Oh man. And like, it was weird. Like, cause I've had a lot of different wolf encounters. I've had a lot of bear encounters, but like this one was a bad, we were just in the bad place at the wrong time. I think the ones that were coming behind us were young wolves coming to help the kill.
Okay.
They're going to help their buddies. And we were right in the middle, but like, it was one of those things you could see it in their eyes. Like we were that close that they're like, what's going on? And we're yelling and screaming and they're not just taking off. They just kind of slowly like look at us, you know, and like kind of go up. And they
ignored you guys for the most part?
Pretty much. They just kind of ran up the hill and then they came up and then all of them just chased the elk up the hill the other way.
Wow.
And
do you guys have like firearms on you? Like, are you allowed to defend yourself in that scenario? Or
at that time, there was a forest rule that unless we took like some LEO law enforcement training, we weren't allowed to carry firearms with us.
Wow.
It was one of those things, like, especially when I was packing with stock, just for stock reasons, mm-hmm. I would still carry with me, mainly for if I rolled a horse down a hill or something like that, mm-hmm. and had a broken leg, like for the animal safety, to be able to put the animal down.
Yeah.
That occasion I was not, because we didn't have stock and on a 7-day packer, we were going to push like 3,000 feet of elevation at the end of the trip. So I was like, ooh, going as light as possible, yeah, you know, like cut your toothbrush as like little as possible type stuff. So wasn't packing at that point in time. So I truly believe like if me or the other guy I was with like freaked out and took off running, like they might have just been like, well, that doesn't have horns, that might be easier to take out, you know. And that was before like the wolf hunting really picked up in Idaho, so like they really weren't that scared of humans at that point in time either.
Okay.
That's a close call for sure.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Did you end up getting to the two locations you were trying to reach?
We ended up getting both the locations. Our tents were really close that night when we set up our tents.
I would have slept with the other guy's tent. I'd be like
shoulder to shoulder. Yeah. Wow. You know, most people haven't ever even like seen a wolf.
Yeah. Like, let alone seven running at you.
Yeah. People listening are like, oh yeah, there's seven dogs running at you. No, I just saw a video on YouTube or Instagram, one of the two. And it was like the realization of how much larger wolves are than like your typical dog or husky. And the wolf stood up on its hind legs, like bigger than the man. And I was like,
I've never seen that. Like a wolf bigger than a man.
It was huge. It like went and put its paws on his shoulders and his head was like above the guy's head.
Oh yeah.
Could have been a short man, but I was like, this is wild.
Yeah. So would you, if like when you do that stuff, do you prefer wolf interactions or bear interactions, or like, what about any wildcats? I feel like cats would be the scariest.
Cats are the scariest, but like the scary thing about cats is like you wouldn't even know you're there. They're there.
Oh yeah, yeah,
like
that's sneaky.
You can walk right by them. You won't even know they're there. So you start seeing
if cats there, it's too late.
Yeah, you start seeing cat signs and like your prints and stuff like that. Yeah, it scares you because you're like, it could be in a tree above you, and they're that quiet. They're that stealthy.
Wow.
So yeah, cats can be scary. Most of the time, you just don't see them; they don't know they're in the salmon where I'm at. We don't have grizzlies.
Okay.
We only have black bears. So like the black bear encounters that I've had, you know, just you know, act big, scare, yell. They take off. They tend to be scared of you. So
okay.
So I haven't really been that scared of bears, but like, if I was in grizzly country, it'd be a different story.
Have you been,
I was in Yellowstone or Glacier or something like that, I would like.
Have you gone to Alaska?
I haven't.
Dude, you need to go.
I know. Nick keeps inviting me out there. I need to take him up.
I went last year for the Alaska camps, and like we went out, like did like a 4x4, went out to glaciers, and like it's like frontier, like backcountry, like for real. I was like, I've never seen anything like it. I'm sure to you it'd maybe be similar to what you're doing, but
I don't know. Anytime you start seeing those wildlife encounters and stuff like that, and like I enjoy it. Like that's why I work in that environment. So I enjoy being out there. So I think I think you'd love it.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people that worked out. They used to do that FIA, that forest inventory for Rocky Mountain. They used to do it in Alaska, and they used to have to like fly off a boat and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I hope not in the winter there.
Oh, summertime, my God.
No, it's like a 3-month job during the summer.
Okay. Yeah, it has to be. It has to be. There's no way.
But like on that, like the moose up there, like I'm actually more scared of moose than I am.
Really? Dude, I heard they're violent.
I was within, like when I first landed in Alaska, I landed in Anchorage and we were waiting for Joanne. So he went out to like a hiking spot that was like 30 minutes from the airport. And we go up, and within like 10 minutes, I'm within like, maybe like me to like the door of this hotel room. There's a moose and he's like staring at us, but he was super big, gentle. He was just eating berries. And I had like a Polaroid camera and I was like, do you want to take a Polaroid picture of this moose? And I did. I didn't realize how dangerous it was until afterward. I was kind of looking at Nick to see like how safe I was. I was like, is this cool? Like, can we be here? Is this moose chilling? And Nick was like, just chilling.
He's like, you're not dead yet.
Yeah. Nick was like, we're fine. And then he said the only sketchy part was like at one point, like when I took the picture, it's pictures on my Instagram. But the moose like looked straight up and stared at me. And that's like, Nick kind of was like, it was this moment right here. It was right there.
Oh yeah.
So when he did that and he looked at me, Nick was like, he like kind of puckered up, was like, this may not be good.
But that's a big moose too. That's
like very close. Yeah.
They just grow. Everything grows bigger in Alaska.
Yeah.
Like, that would be like, we don't grow anything near that size in Idaho.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Yeah. Have you visited any other like outdoor wildlife ranges in the world? Is that like a bucket list, or is that just because of where you live and what you do? Like, yeah, if I were to ask you,
I'm very familiar
list.
With that ecosystem and in the ecology in that area. But I do travel, and I love getting out and visiting different ecosystems and learning about the ecology and the plant and vegetation life and everywhere we go.
Wow.
Last year I was, got to go to, even just go to Germany, compete.
Yeah. I saw that. Yeah. It's been cool.
Yeah. And I was just fascinated with the forests and stuff that they have over there and the very similarities that they actually do have over in North America and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
The forests in Europe are like, they still can be pretty like breathtaking, but nothing feels as like underdeveloped and untouched by man and like some stuff in America, because like people have been in Europe for so long that like everything's kind of been explored.
It's true.
But in America, sometimes you get to spots and you're like, I don't know if anybody's ever been here before.
I'm sure someone has, but like, it's like very few people. It's very easy to get out. And so I actually, I can't even remember. It was a couple years into Ninja Warrior. I actually got invited out to New Zealand to help open up a trampoline park that put in a Ninja Warrior park there.
Oh, wow.
And I would tell you what, like New Zealand, hands down, was probably one of my favorite places.
Oh, you went?
Wow.
Yeah.
I got to spend 4 days on the South Island and then 3 days on the North Island.
Yeah.
And I'm like, the South Island was amazing as far as like ecosystems and like very similar to like some of the ecosystems we have over here in North America. Reminded me of like certain spots and stuff. But then just having kind of almost like that Puget Sound kind of like coves and ocean and stuff like
nice,
that as
yeah.
well. Yeah.
No, I want to go to New Zealand. It's definitely
That's high on my bucket list. There and Australia. I was talking to Olivia the other day. I was like, dang, I need
Australia
to go visit Australia.
Can keep its sharks and spiders and snakes.
I was about to say, like, New Zealand's got everything Australia's got, but without all the dangerous stuff.
Good, man. Miss me with Australia. I guess we can get into Ninja a little bit. We always kind of like do that when we have a first time ninja guest, like what, tell us your story about like just getting like what happened, like how did you find out about the show? How did you apply? What was that story like?
Yeah.
Digging into the archives here.
Everybody's got the story.
I know. So season 4 is the first year I applied. And I think, and you guys probably resonate with this a little bit, just happened to catch it on TV and just knew it, like it just hits with you a little bit. Like, I think I can do that.
Yeah.
And definitely had a lot of family members going like, yeah, really? Yeah, whatever. Like, sure. Like, but they, I almost actually applied for season 3. Looking back, I should have, but I was like, I should train a little bit. Figure it out. But then I ended up failing the warp wall in season 4. And I'm like,
were you wearing cowboy boots?
No.
Okay.
But, man, I just had poor technique. Right? Mm. Actually, season 4's...
I think a lot of people were failing the warp wall back then.
Yeah, season 4's warp wall is actually pretty tough.
Oh, yeah.
As far as steepness goes and everything like that as well.
Yeah.
Just a wall. It wasn't even warped yet.
Just run up this wall.
And back then too, like they were still breaking it up into this is the first time they did regions.
Wow.
And they did the six regions, Northwest. And
everyone
Southwest.
Had like their own color for Vegas.
Yeah, everyone had their own color for Vegas. And I had a tough region. The Northwest was actually probably one of the tougher ones.
Wow.
Back in season four, because we had basically all the NorCal guys in there. We had the David Campbell, the Brian Craig. Like back then, they were like kind of like the ones. Like the James McGrath was still in there, so I was competing against David Campbell, Brian Craig, James McGrath, David Campbell's cousin. I can't remember Travis. You know, Brian Orozco.
Still remember that guy's mustache. It was pristine.
Yeah, so I made it all the way to the Warp Wall, and I think I just barely missed the cutoff to go to semis or something like that. But then like you look back then like the Midwest or like the Mid South, like people were like failing obstacle three and making it to the semis, you know? So it was just luck of the draw. You know, had a tough region. But then it came back in season five and made it back. You made it to Vegas for the first time and stuff like that. So, and just one of those things started having success and it just, you know, fueled me to train, got excited about it and just kept coming back and doing better and better.
Yeah. So much so you build a bunch of stuff out on the property, right? Or just use what you have on the ranch?
Yeah, I started building, you know, we had open barns and stuff like that. I just started, you know, just basically hanging things from the rafters and just, you know, swinging around and, you know, building little cliffhanger ledges and, you know, building what I could with what I had.
Yeah.
Setting up straw bales for, you know, spider jumps and stuff like that. Definitely started just kicking it up a notch and just getting excited about it. And,
What role would you say that ninjas played in your life? Like, has it been, like for some people, it's like an outlet, like they want to do the sport. Others, it's like a platform, like let's do this, let's be the character and train hard, do well, and then see how I can leverage that in other areas of my life. Like, in what ways has the show affected your normal life, I guess?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's changed over the years and my aspect, my perspective, you know, of the show and the competition has changed, you know, just as the show has evolved.
Yeah.
So is my thought process and in training for it and everything. I definitely I needed an outlet. I think at first, I wasn't college wrestling anymore. I was looking for something to keep me in shape, just something to keep me active. And I'm the type of person that kind of needs something to, you know, like, you know, try to achieve something.
Yeah.
Something to conquer. Yeah.
Yeah.
I tried to try like a mini triathlon and
I
finished it, but like, man, I suck at swimming. So like, why not do Ninja Warrior where I need to stay out of the water?
The goal is to not get wet.
Yeah. So I was just kind of looking for something I thought I'd be good at, something I thought'd be fun. And Ninja Warrior, just the sport of ninja itself, just kind of, it just filled that niche for me.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, from there, it's just, it's definitely exploded beyond what I ever thought it would, or the direction I ever thought I, you know, wanted to take it or whatnot, just having that exposure year after year.
Yeah.
I was pretty consistently, almost all my runs were consistently shown. On Ninja Warrior.
That's something not a lot of people can say.
It's weird, and it's weird even talking to people sometimes because I think I won almost five seasons before I ever had a fast forward.
I mean, it's just, I think it's because it's such a your silhouette is almost like recognizable, right? Like cowboy, like jeans, and it's just something that people look forward to seeing because it's more relatable, right? But yeah, I mean, I didn't know that you were like such a OG. I didn't realize you went back to all the way like season four. But that's how have you, you know, kept up the motivation to want to keep training? Do you still train as much as you used to back in the day? Are you still as active? Or are you kind of just still doing it to do it now?
Yeah, because also on that note, like a lot of ninjas nowadays, their lives and careers revolve around ninja, and you've got a full, I mean, you got a wife, you've got two kids, you've got the ranch lifestyle. And so how is, exactly what kids said, like, how is training and all that?
it's tough to keep training with all that, you know, but I try not to use a lot of that as excuses.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I try to use it as more motivation more than anything else. It is kind of tough when everyone like has access to like these gyms. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not only training every day, but, you know, or can train every day, at these pretty high tech facilities nowadays, but you know, they're also, you know, coaching and teaching, which, you know, helps you in a lot of different ways too.
Also getting pushed by other athletes that are doing ninja.
Pushed by other athlete. I've been one of the very few that just trains by himself solo. And you know, trying to keep that motivation, can be tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think I enjoy it so much. Do you want me to stop or?
No, you're good.
You're good.
Memory card got full.
Yeah. There's something about being able to test yourself every year.
Yeah. Yeah. Push and your limits.
I'm the type of person that doesn't really care too much about like what other people think or what other people like, you know, say about me or I'm out there to see where I'm at, what I can do mentally, what I can do physically. And yeah, some years I'm definitely not like what I was 4 or 5 years ago. And I know that coming into it. But I'm always curious about where I am at.
Yeah.
And see what I can do. Not only physically, but just mentally. Sometimes like some of my years that I thought I was most physically in shape, I did the worst.
Wow.
And I don't know if it was just cause I was mentally in the worst spot or just, you know, fluke accident type stuff. And some of the years that I came in that I was just like, I definitely didn't like hit the cardio as much as I could have, you know, I had some of the best years.
Wow. Wow.
And yeah.
That's really cool. And then I guess over the years, you mentioned New Zealand. Have there been some really cool opportunities that have come from being on the show, whether, you know, business or fun or whatever? I saw you just posted those shoes, those really, really cool shoes that were like custom made. Have there been, you know, any stories you have of some really cool opportunities that have come from being on the show?
Yeah. You know, Ninja Warrior's given me such a great platform. Not only just, you know, the exposure from the show, but, you know, being able to, you know, build a brand on its own,
yeah.
You know, kind of a, you know, cowboy ninja Western kind of,
yeah.
I've met a lot of people within the agricultural community. I get people reaching out within the ranching, farming, ag community all the time, you know, just thanking for me for, you know, showing the light on,
Representing.
Yeah. For ag, not only just on the show, but on my social media and stuff like that too.
Yeah.
Cause you know, agriculture can get such, you know, a bad rap sometimes, or things can get misrepresented or construed, you know, in a different way. So being able to, try to show our lifestyle and that Western lifestyle in a good light and stuff like that is, it's probably been some of the most rewarding things. But, you know, honestly, it's led into a lot of different things. I actually was doing work with some local state beef councils, which ended up leading into working with the National Cattlemen's Association. So I was actually a spokesman for Beef It's What's for Dinner for 4 years.
I remember that. Yeah, I remember you posting stuff about it.
That's when I started wearing the Beef It's What's for Ninja shirt and stuff like that. I was doing quite a bit of work for them. I was traveling around the country, you know, doing talks and presentations.
Wow.
And I got to talk at the National Cattlemen's Association. I was literally on the main stage, like right after like Terry Bradshaw came on and stuff like that. Some really cool opportunities like that.
Yeah.
I was working with a trampoline park making company that was making Ninja Warrior obstacles or Ninja Warrior courses. And that's when the opportunity to come, you know, travel to New Zealand. So, that was really cool. And that one was really special to me because that was actually right before my wife really started getting sick. So it was one of those things where like, I got to go and travel and I got to bring her with me and we got to, kind of do some adventurous stuff, you know, before she started kind of getting sick and ill and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I also, you know, got to travel all over the US doing stuff for them. I got to travel to Denmark and do a training over there for them. So
A lot of, over the world.
You've been all over the place. Yeah.
You've been kind of killing it on TikTok too, like past year or so, right?
Yeah, that was a COVID lockdown thing. I was like, oh, let's try this app, and like I think I just hit it right, you know, at the right time, hit some viral stuff. I did some.
Well, it's like, good content. Like, it's different.
Yeah,
you have such a capability of making content that most people can't.
Yeah.
That's just like people want to see because it's just a lifestyle that's not common. So how many followers now?
I think like 475,000.
Half a million.
Like,
that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. No, that actually led into last year. I did some stunt work on the Yellowstone season 5.
Did you really?
A little bit because I was doing stunts on my horse on TikTok, and then like some connections through American Ninja Warrior, and they film right over the hill in Montana for me, so it just happened to like hit me up, and like so I got to do some stunt work for them on
the
show.
I've been meaning to watch the show. Everybody's telling me to watch that show.
Dude, everybody's saying that one's great.
That's awesome. This guy's stunts. your resume is insane.
And an author. I'll check out this book.
Resume is insane.
Dude, what was it like writing this? Writing a book? Like, did you just have the story in within you, and you're like, man, I've always wanted to write a book? Or was someone like, you should write it?
Like, I'm wondering, we've never done this on the podcast. I wonder, like, I guess we could read the prologue, or is there like a page that we could read that would kind of give like a taste?
I mean, you could read the back. Is like a synopsis overview.
Read the back, or
Like if you had like 3 minutes or like 2 minutes to kind of sell this book and get people interested in it, whether it's something in here or you just kind of give like the synopsis of it to get, you know, if some listeners want to know what it's about, maybe see if they want to read it, how would you use that time?
I could do a little breakdown of it, and you know, basically what I would say is I always enjoyed reading and writing as a kid. So like going back to your question, like, yeah, I always kind of like wanted to strive to be an author and be a storyteller. Mm-hmm. I've actually always thought it'd be fun to like lead it into like, you know, script writing and stuff like that. And I always thought to like be able to tell a good story, I should be able to do it in a book first. So I didn't know if author and book but honestly, after doing this one, like I'm totally in love with like the writing process and writing book, where I'm actually working on book 2 to this one.
Really?
And I think it's going to end up being a 3 book series. So
nice. A little trilogy, maybe turn into a movie later down the line.
Come on.
Yeah. NBC, pick it up. No.
NBC. Yeah. Right. Come on, NBC. Yeah.
Say, why not?
So if I were to pitch it to someone, I would say it's like a Percy Jackson meets kind of like Transformers, The Mummy, kind of with a twist of American Ninja Warrior in there.
Wow. Action adventure.
Yeah. Action adventure mystery. It's basically about, a kid who's, I bring it back to a lot of the people I know. There's actually a lot of the coaches in here in the book are kind of based off of like, and you can see just reading it, it's based off a lot of the people that I've competed with over the years.
Okay. Oh, really?
It's definitely kind of based off of, not really based off of, but like characters or models of certain coaches and stuff like that. And I've been trying to really do that in the right way in the book, which has been kind of fun. But it's basically about a kid who's he's a really good athlete, but he's a rock climber. So he's in high school, like not everyone really knows he's an athlete. He's known more for being book smart and being smart in the classroom. But then his best friend's like total jock, star QB, but he's good. He gets good grades, but is not known for being star in the classroom.
Yeah.
So what I really like about the book is they kind of work together and helps bring the one out and being like, hey, you can be, you know, you're really smart, but you're a good athlete. You're better than athlete than you think you are. You're really good at a lot of this stuff. And then the other guy too is like bringing out, hey, you're a lot smarter than you think too. Bridging that gap. You know, growing up in the 80s and 90s, like I felt like there was this constant narrative of like, geeks versus jock, you know, like you're either a nerd or you're like, you're into sports and like
find your lane.
Like I was always the type of person. I was like, I like both. Like, I go hang out with both crowd type, type person. I always find myself being a little nerdy and then jockeying in certain ways. So,
and that combined with your personality, you said you don't really care what people think. I'm like, that's like the perfect, perfect combination.
So like, the kind of the goal in the book too, is like to kind of like put up a good role model of like, yeah, yeah, you can be book smart. Like, so not a, like, and like you guys know an American Ninja Warrior, when you're looking at an obstacle, you have to kind of know the physics behind that way yeah. obstacles work and the way like things like, you know, the pivot points and stuff like move. That. And like, yeah. basically kind of, you know, the physics behind it. And so I tried to bring that out in the book a lot too.
Yeah.
Like you got to understand a lot of that stuff when you're doing the ninja wow. obstacles and then try to throw like sci-fi fiction elements in there. Like,
yes.
They help save a woman's life early on in the book. And then they get recruited to this national, interdisciplinary juvenile, national association,
which ninja acronym.
Yeah. It's yes. ninja okay. acronym. So they basically get invited to this program that they think is like a summer camp that they will like lead to scholarships at the end of the summer or something like
okay.
that. And then they start realizing that there's some, you know, secretive high tech stuff going on behind this, behind the ninja organization.
Okay. And, don't tell me anymore. I'm yeah. sold. I'm sold. That sounds really cool. Sick.
Yeah.
Wow. And more on the way too.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Wow. Cool. Super cool. Now, total like 180. And I know we've mentioned a lot, even like talking recently with Jamie, some of the harder things that we've gone through in life. You mentioned your wife, Heather, and you mentioned, you know, you even changed your job in recent years to help better be there for her with her MS. For those that are listening that are, you know, going through things or health issues or health scares themselves or are living with a family member or loved one who has a health issue, would you be willing to share a little bit about, you know, your wife's journey and what that's looked like over the years and a little bit of that?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I would say it was hard coming out with that even to begin with. Me and my wife probably were dealing with it for about a good 3 or 4 years before we even came out with it on Ninja.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And it's like one of those things, like I even look back at like some of those seasons, like, and like I had some shitty, like back then they like, I take a season like that now compared to some of the seasons I've yeah. had recently.
Yeah.
But like, to me, that was like, I was having some shitty seasons.
Yeah.
And like, looking back now, I'm like, well, I was going through a lot of stuff and I mm-hmm. was like, it's a lot of stuff that like I never talked about on the show because it was just personal.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But it was just one of those things. Ninja was coming out and doing hometowns for like the first 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But then like, it was the same story. It was a ranch story. So they stopped, they were still showing my runs, but they basically stopped doing hometowns on me.
Okay.
Well, like there was like 3 or 4 years that they never came and did a hometown.
Oh, wow.
And that whole time Heather was basically progressively going from, you know, walking to a wheelchair. Well, so then they came back out. And she was in a wheelchair and they're like, well, what's going on? Like, so I was like, well, can't hide it anymore. Like yeah. She's got MS. And then it was, so MS is, it's an autoimmune disease called multiple sclerosis.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically, a disease where your body kind of attacks itself. Her immune system works so hard that it actually attacks her own myelin sheath around her. So the myelin sheath is like an insulator around your nerves.
Okay.
So imagine like an extension cord, and then the rubber that's around the extension cord.
Yeah, the coating.
Mm-hmm. So that coating, rubber coating, is like the myelin sheath around your nerves. So if you scrape that rubber coating off and then try to plug that in, you're going to be losing electrical current and you're not going to get all the electric current where you need to,
yeah.
to go, because you're losing it out where the myelin sheaths.
It's a really good way of putting it.
So that's basically what MS does, is like, your immune system attacks itself. You start getting lesions in your brain, and then that causes your, body to start eating its own myelin sheath. So basically she slowly started losing, like she's like, her brain sending signals down to her leg, but the signal's getting lost somewhere. So she just started slowly losing basically her mobility. She started losing functions in her hands and stuff like that. And MS, there's several different types of MS. There's, you know, primary progressive, secondary progressive, relapse remitting. And she was relapse remitting for the longest time, which is tends to be what most people have. So like you'll kind of have a relapse. So you'll have like small, signs of, you know, certain things like blurry vision mm-hmm. or like tingling in your feelings or like just like twitching or something like that. Mm-hmm. But then it goes away. So a lot of people like have a little
like symptoms, a flare up kind of.
Yeah. And then goes away. Well, hers, after we had our first child, started relapsing, remitting. And then after we had our second child, it kicked her into secondary progressive. And once she hit secondary progressive, she had this major decline. And we were trying all sorts of things. We were switching her meds. And I think a lot of it, we switched her meds a little bit here and there because like some of the meds she was on originally wasn't she couldn't have while she was pregnant.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So she had to get off certain meds and then she had to get back on. And then just the change of hormones between having a child. And it seemed like it was almost clockwork. It was about 6 to 8 months after having a child that like, those hormones would switch and then she'd start having secondary progressive, relapse. Rough part about MS is there's no cure for it. Mm. They only have medications that help prevent relapses.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing on the market, nothing they have that is shown to regrow that myelin sheath in those lesions once you have them. The good thing about Heather is after that secondary progressive relapse, we did do a lot of experimental stuff. We did some stem cells. We have stopped the lesions and everything from getting worse. She's not getting any worse.
Okay.
Wow.
But we have not, we've tried stem cells. We've tried all sorts of experimental stuff. There's just nothing out there to prove into regrown that damage that's already happened. So,
wow.
So now we're just kind of living in this situation of where we're not giving up. We're still constantly trying. There's always miracles that seem to like happen and stuff like that. You always hear people like, and we messed around with diet, all sorts of different stuff.
Okay.
But at this point, we're just kind of hoping for that next jump in medical. And there's been a lot of progression. So a lot of advances in medical, and especially the last 3 or 4 or 5 years. So
yeah.
Wow.
There's still hope for sure.
Yeah.
I think with AI, I think a lot of like, I was doing some research with AI and in the medical field, it seems like AI is going to like boost like research and just development in a lot of things. I don't know if that's one of the categories that it'll be helpful in, but for sure, I think that a lot of things in the next, the decade coming where AI gets introduced into some of these research things, especially in the medical world, could lead to some, really game-breaking cures, maybe. I don't know, who knows, but that's tough for sure. Now, is it, when this happened, did you immediately like, what was your initial reaction to like...
like the diagnosis?
Yeah, like was this something that you guys expected earlier on, or was it come out of the blue, or?
So she got diagnosed in her early 20s when we were first, I don't know, we've been dating for a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But she got diagnosed. She like, we were actually, so we were doing this, it was called the Western Play Days, it's over the 4th of July. And we were doing like dumb games where like she runs her horse down and hops in a wheelbarrow and I push her back in a wheelbarrow.
Oh, that's
horse.
Fun.
Or the rescue race where she'll run her horse down, jump off, I'll jump on and then swing her on back. We run back double.
It's like a couples race?
Yeah.
Oh, fun.
So I had jumped on her horse and then I grabbed her like right under her armpit and I swung her on back of the horse and mm-hmm. we rode back double. Well, where I grabbed her, she went numb from like here down. And then she ended up going down from like almost down to her hip. And I thought, or we both thought that like, maybe I like pinched a nerve when I swung her up and grabbed and swung her up, and it eventually went away. But then like she started getting tingling back in her fingers and stuff like that. So she went and got diagnosed, and they diagnosed her with MS. But they, looking at everything else, they thought it was more of like a relapse remitting.
Okay.
As long as she was on medication. That's like the least severe? Yeah, least severe. Most people, some people will live like their whole lives without even knowing they have it.
Wow.
Type stuff. So, you know, that's kind of why we, you know, we've always been positive. She's always been a super hard worker. She's, even with like everything that's going on right now, like she's in a wheelchair. She can, you know, hardly move her left hand a lot of times, but you know, she's got a degree in mental health and, high school counseling. So she's still our one and only high school counselor in Salmon.
Wow.
She's still, still working. Yeah. She still goes to school every day. Like, and like some people are like, oh, she should just, you know, like work as, you know, work on, you know, healing herself and stuff like that. But man, I, there's something like she loves going and talking with the kids in the high school and helping the kids in the high school. And I think with everything that's going on, like I've had to pick up so many things around the house. Like we used to be a couple that worked together with everything, you know, like we'd like do the, you know, we split dishes and laundry and stuff like that. And, you know, like it's gotten to the point where like I had to start picking up all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know? So like her, you know, like I can tell she feels a value still going and like,
That's huge
being
for
a counselor.
Like
and like, I think that keeps her going. I think it would be hard on her if she was just stuck at home and like,
to, like, you know, still have that outlet where you're making a difference. You're making an
and
impact.
And her mind's
being
still
useful.
Strong. And she can still, you know, she still helps, you know, so many kids and stuff like that. And well, I think it's really cool that kids can see her, you know, working so hard and struggling, like, doing, you know, everyday task that she, you know, she still shows up and does her job and does what she needs to do. So,
Well, I love seeing you guys. I love seeing you guys on social. I love seeing you guys, honestly, just the whole family. You guys are such a beautiful family. And I didn't even realize all like the whole family was here in LA. You walked in with your goggles and was like, yeah, we spent the day at the Harry Potter world. And I was like, oh yeah, your kids are here. Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah. I wasn't able to bring them last week, but, it's actually their spring break this week. So
oh,
I was like,
nice.
Might as well.
I couldn't find cheap enough flights, but man, I ended up doing the 16-hour drive with them, but
like, oh what? Yeah. Hold on.
Yeah, so we drove down 16 hours. We made several stops along the way, and then did Universal today and stuff like that.
So,
that's crazy.
Oh my god!
But it, you know, it means a lot to me to have them here.
Assuming
they haven't been on the sidelines in 2 or 3 years. So,
wow. Yeah. Same with Abby. Yeah. Abby's like, this is my first time back to set, and like since 2019. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh. Wow.
16-hour drive. Yeah. That's crazy.
That's like Houston to Florida. And Abby and I drove there for our honeymoon, which was a million times further than I thought it would be.
That's far, man. 16-hour drive is no joke. Do you sent it in one go?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was going to stop. Like I kept thinking, like, oh, we'll break it up. And then I just kept
if you got it, you're just like...
Things are rolling good. I just like, let's just keep going.
Yeah, that's crazy. What, I'm going to think we're kind of an hour in, so I'm going to try to break up the last section into kind of like some more, you know, fun, light questions. What are your... I mean, out there, I'm trying to think of maybe more specific stuff to ranch life, but I'm so unfamiliar with ranch life that it's hard for me to go to. But do you watch like TV series or movies, or I'm assuming is that like a, what's like your thing?
You guys just watch the grass grow every day?
Yeah, you know, the thing about ranching is like you do live with the seasons.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about where we live and you got your calving season, your haying season, you're changing water, you're you know, going into fall and stuff like that. There's something about living that rural life and living with the seasons and enjoying it, especially up in Idaho.
Yeah, really.
But like, yeah, definitely come wintertime, we, you know, things slow down a little bit, and you know, me and Heather will try to watch some series.
Okay.
Or, you know, we'll try to get some family series, you know.
So what are your top three series of all time?
Oh.
Me and Heather really got into the show Vikings.
Yes,
oh, yeah.
That's my number one. Yeah. Yes, Lance. Yes.
Yes, Lance.
Which
right
led
answer.
Us which led us into The Last Kingdom too.
Yes, that's okay. That's another great
yeah.
show.
Yeah, he's been on that
wow.
one.
Wow. So such
we,
a good answer.
Yeah, we really started getting into those like
yeah.
Norris kind of yeah. like
Vikings is my yeah. number one all time show. Yeah, such a good show.
It really was.
And then have you seen the new like the new one like with the
oh Valhalla?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good too.
Yeah, yeah. We yeah. did we did watch that one.
I'll always miss Ragnar though. That was like that character yeah. is so solid, man. Yeah. Such a good show. So yeah. you got Vikings, then you would say would you put Last Kingdom second?
Yeah, I bet my wife would put Last Kingdom for, before Vikings.
Really?
I put Vikings above it, but she really, yeah.
Yeah, the only reason I wouldn't do that, it's like, Last Kingdom is great, but it's I like Vikings because it has a lot of different characters, whereas Last yeah. Kingdom is just Uhtred, and it's like, that's him.
I think she had a thing for Uhtred.
Okay, that's what it is.
So I think that's why she would put him first.
Yeah, fair enough, fair enough.
That's great.
We got number three?
Oh, we've watched a lot of different series. I'm trying to think of like something good.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot. There's more TV shows out.
Oh man.
Now than ever before in any point in time in history. It was yeah. just crazy to think about just yeah. the accessibility that we have.
We actually just got done watching The Outer Banks.
I was okay. thinking about starting that. I was like hovering that. The
and
other
it was
day.
Surprisingly good. You know, really? Far-fetched in a few spots, but
okay. a lot of ideas that way
yeah,
anyways.
Yeah. Well, I would say it was worth the watch.
Okay. Okay.
cool.
I don't know if it was on my list of
yeah.
I'm trying to think. They're yeah.
I used to have Game of Thrones on my list, but then the last season just took it right
I
off.
I heard that ruined it for like everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really
did you watch the new one?
The
House of Dragons.
I haven't yet.
It was pretty good.
Okay. Okay. That's good to know.
But I know I'm with you on the Game of Thrones.
Yeah, man, it was number one until it was number 27.
I don't think I took it as hard as a lot of other people because like I didn't watch it when it was like major pop culture.
I didn't either, actually.
I watched it later on. So like I watched it all in a row. So I was like, it still sucked.
Yeah. No.
But like I don't think I was invested as much as ever. Like, fair I think enough. If I would have been invested like everyone else was, I would have been as upset as everyone else.
They fumbled it so hard.
They did.
It was such an easy layup. And they were like, we're going to piss everybody off.
The whole world.
No, I'm glad I'm another Vikings fan. That's a, if you haven't seen Vikings, watch Vikings.
Yeah, I'd recommend it.
It's a great show. You'll learn a lot. I don't think I've ever asked you, what are your top three series?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
It can't be anime. No anime.
No anime. Well,
he doesn't have any.
I have very few shows out of that then. Even Sean Ryan, I was telling him, I really like the Daredevil series.
Okay.
And I'm very concerned and nervous of them revamping the series later this year.
Yeah.
So we'll see about that. Gosh, series? I like comedies a lot. So like The Office.
Okay. That's a solid pick. That's a solid pick. I can't.
Like
that
one and Parks and Rec. Those okay. comedies, man.
A little more lighthearted, but yeah.
I enjoy laughing so much that I will just, we'll look for comedy shows to watch. So those have been some solid ones. But then I love the action adventure ones. So things along the lines of like Daredevil where it's like kind of darker, grittier, almost like usually like DC shows yeah. I like. But yeah, those are some of mine that I enjoy a lot.
Actually, I hit up, and this is kind of, I would tell you this off the podcast, but I'm going to say it on the podcast anyways, but I was such a fan of Vikings, and I have Norwegian blood in me. I'm a quarter Norwegian, and I'm, you know, the Eric the Red character?
Yeah.
So I'm a descendant of that bloodline. We can trace, I have a ton of family in Norway, and they like pretty much own an island and live there, and they like can trace themselves back to that guy. That's why I was like huge into that show, but yeah. I was like, I tried to find I found the stunt coordinator for the Valhalla series and I'd like talked to him a little bit and they just finished, I think, filming season three. He like after season three airs, they'll know if they're like revamped for season four. And I was like, dude, I'll do it for free. Like, let me be on that show.
And he was that would just, be cool.
Yeah. He was like, dude, if we re-up, like, you know, contact me again and we'll see if we can work something out. I was like,
that'd be cool.
I was like, I'll pay you at this point.
I'd say I'd watch it anyways, but I know I'd definitely watch it if you're doing some stunts on there.
It'd be so sick.
That's awesome.
That'd be such a, that's like a bucket list thing for me for sure.
Yeah.
Such a, good time.
That's fun.
Lance, where can people find you if they want more Lance Peekers? What's your TikTok, your Instagram? We talked about the book a little bit. Check out if you forgot about the book stuff.
The Warrior Within. The Warrior Ninja Within Games.
On Amazon. But what's your handle on most things?
So I kept it simple. At Lance Peekus, LanceePekus on everything.
Boom.
Wow.
Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter.
Nice.
And then LancePekus.com. Links to all that as well.
Nice.
Links to the book. Got a couple other cool projects I'm working on there too. I'm starting to build a list of, because I've made a lot of connections with farmers and ranchers over the years. Mm-hmm. It's really early on, but my goal is to have almost direct market sales of farmers and ranchers in every state. So you want to be able to find someone selling a quarter half or full beef.
Like, is that something that you'd like we're in Houston, but like if I need like some meat, can I hit you up and like get some meat?
Yeah.
From
yeah. Eventually, like we're getting there, but I do know people that can hook you up. But my goal too with that website would be like you could go onto my website, go to be like, okay, Houston, and then look up anybody that's selling beef that's close to you, direct market.
Nice, yeah.
Raising it from, start to finish, right close to you.
Wow.
Yeah, just connecting people with that, yeah. Because it's so good. I mean, I have a buddy who I usually would get meat from him because he would buy like a whole thing and then he'd have three chest freezers and he would just sell it off because he can't eat all of it. But definitely, like if you've never done it before, getting you like your... getting like a whole cow and like or a half or I don't know what the terminology or what the options are for like buying from a rancher, but it's definitely like better quality meat than you would find anywhere else in like a supermarket or anything.
For the most part, it tends to be less processed. You tend to know your butcher a little bit better. You can get your cut specific the way that you want, and it's exactly how it raised. I don't work specifically with NCBA and the beef councils anymore, so I can kind of talk about some of that stuff a little bit. Like the stuff you're getting from the grocery store, it's all safe. It's all good stuff. But when it comes down to it, the three to four major packers in the U.S., even if they're sticking U.S. labels on it, like it could be shipped from who knows where.
Really?
And then just slaughtered in the U.S. and then a U.S.
It would just be
label be considered U.S.
We didn't even touch on this, but I think it would be interesting conversation. We're just talking about like the whole like slaughterhouses and like what maybe your thoughts are on that. Because there's a ton of, I don't know what the shows are called, but a ton of shows came out back in the day. And I remember there's a big like uproar on people just not being, stoked on how animals are treated and
like animal cruelty and all that stuff.
No, they just have like, slaughterhouses and pretty much will breed cows in just super not humane,
terrible
environment.
Conditions.
Like, and they're just kind of bred in like a box and then killed immediately.
Yeah. So, cattle are, and this can go down a real big rabbit hole. I could talk on this for hours, but I'll try to quickly answer a lot of that as I can. So cattle are interesting part of the ag system because they are such big animals. And a lot of people that are against animal agriculture, especially cattle, try to use that as the negative is like, oh, it takes so much land. It takes so much resources.
To have cattle.
Yeah. But to me, that's actually the benefit is because it does take so much land that you never are you ever raising cattle in a small confined box.
Yeah.
My family are cow calf cattle ranch. They are born and raised in the areas that people want them to be born and raised in like what people think are picturesque. Where
ideal environment.
We sell them at 10 months. They can go to a backgrounder. A backgrounder is basically a farmer who puts up a lot of, soy, corn, whatever. They have excess harvest that does not make food quality.
Mm-hmm.
Or they just have excess harvest altogether that they can't sell. They buy the cattle. They buy our cattle. They go and they'll clean up whatever was missed from harvest. They'll clean up whatever they couldn't sell. They'll put some weight on them, and then they'll get sold to a feed yard or a slaughterhouse. never is a slaughterhouse actually like calving out and having them up in its confined spots.
Okay, they're not born and raised in the slaughterhouses.
Never. Pigs and chicken, on the other hand, totally different system. I'm not so familiar with it, so I'm not going to talk super negative about it. But you could find some probably not as good situations with like sows and pigs being born, raised, and confined in one spot. Cattle, on the other hand, they're just such big. They require so much resources. Like I had to like downsize a bunch to be able to do direct market sales, because to be able to start to finish, cows take up to 2 years to be able to become, finished, especially if you're not using any grains and stuff like that.
Yeah.
How much does a cow like sell for? Like if somebody just wanted to buy the whole cow, like butchered and everything, what would that run them?
It really depends. Well, it depends on the market. That's a hard part about almost all of agriculture is like,
when you buy and sell stuff,
it's basically stock prices. Some years are bump, you know, they call them bumper crops. Some years are just, you're barely scraping by.
What's a good average price you'd say?
I would say if you're buying from a good reputable, you know, rancher and stuff like that, if you might be able to find some good deals from somebody that's just raising it close, but. I would say probably about, $3,000 to $3,500, processed and packaged for a full cow.
Wow.
If you're wanting to get in some more specialized, like strictly grass finished and stuff, you could be, more like $4,000.
Okay. And then how long do you think that amount of meat would last? Like your family of four?
Oh, like for me, if my family of four, I wouldn't even try to put a full cow in the butcher, in the freezer for us. That'd be way more, like maybe a half a cow for a year. And that'd probably still be way more than we needed for the most part.
Wow.
I like to hunt too. So like I have a lot of elk and deer meat too. So like,
wow.
Nice. Yeah. I love venison. Yeah. It's a good time.
Dude, it's tasty.
But like that's the thing too, is trying to, and a lot of people, they do like cow shares, cattle shares, you as a single male, you don't even need a half a cow. You don't even a quarter cow. You maybe need an eighth of a cow or something, like a 1/16 of a cow.
For a year?
Yeah.
Really?
They wouldn't sell more than that to that person?
I mean, they
would sell as much as you want to buy.
Okay. Yeah. I get you. Just I'm as just far saying as much as
you
need.
It depends on how much, meat you're eating.
People on the carnivore diet.
Are you pretty heavy carnivore diet, I'm assuming?
I eat a lot of meat, yeah.
Yeah.
Tasty. It's probably, daily meat.
Would a lot of your food, do you guys homestead as far as like raising most of your own food, like chickens and
We have our own chickens.
Okay.
And, get our own eggs and stuff like that.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
As far as like homestead, my wife used to do a lot of gardening and stuff like that. And that's just a lot for me to keep up on and stuff like that. So I don't do as much gardening, but we'll do a lot of trading with the neighbor who does a lot of gardening. And like she puts up a huge garden. So it's like almost becomes a community garden a lot of the time.
Wow.
So I'll swing by and grab stuff. So I love, during the summer, during the, good garden season.
Yeah.
Picking up lettuce and having a fresh salad.
Dude, that's wild. Yeah. That's so cool.
Cool. I'm gonna wrap it up. I don't want to take too much more of your time.
Yeah, sorry. You got your kids and family.
Yeah.
If you guys are not a part of the Patreon or want to know more about the Patreon, want to watch these YouTube videos or these full videos of the podcast episode, you can go to patreon.com/kindanice. Join for as little as $5 a month. Help support us. Also, go check out Lance at all his socials. That is at Lance Pegas on everything, essentially.
Yep.
Go check out the book, The Warrior Within, on Amazon, and give it a, if you read it, send us a message. I think me and Daniel are both going to read it, so we might talk about it in some later episodes. But yeah, I'm stoked to read that, and good luck this season, man. Hope you do well.
Yes.
I'll be out there rooting for you. And this has been the Kinda Nice episode, probably 70, I'm going to guess, but I've lost track at this point. Hope you guys are going to have a great rest of your days. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Peace. I'm kinda nice with the gear, shout out my area code. I'm feeling nice with the drill, now I'm about to bury the flow.